So once again, I want to join those, I want to welcome those of you who are watching online and those of you who are watching from all of our Atlanta area churches and churches all over the country that are joining us for this Be Rich season. Our special guest today is Bruce Deal. He is the founder and the CEO of the City of Refuge located in West Atlanta. He'll tell you more about that in just a minute. City of Refuge has been a Be Rich partner for many, many years, and it's one of our favorite partners, primarily because it's in the city of Atlanta and serves our city so well. City of Refuge actually serves people facing poverty, addiction, homelessness, women who've been trafficked, the children of the mothers who've been trafficked. They provide housing, healthcare, job training, childcare, education, and they do this all in one location. This was Bruce's unrealistic, nobody does that, people told him not to do it, vision, and it is working. And as you're going to discover, it's not just working in the city of Atlanta, it's working in some other cities as well. City of Refuge, and this is so important, is not a charity. They literally move people. This is why we love to partner with them. They literally move people from crisis to stability to independence. In fact, one of Bruce's Bruceisms is this. I love this. He says, we don't do good things for people. We do good things with people. So would you please welcome our friend, Bruce Deal. So as we get started, Bruce, Bruce is going to tell his story in just a minute, but I want our congregation to know where City of Refuge is located. So where is it located? It's in relation to the city. We have a picture here to kind of give a perspective.
Yeah, so we're on the west side of Atlanta. We're about 2 miles directly west of the World Congress Center and Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Zip code 30314, known to those that live lives maybe not like you and me today, is the Bluff. And so a lot of bad stuff happens in our neighborhood historically. Highest crime rate state of Georgia, highest homeless population, poverty in unbelievable ways. So it's a really tough, tough, dark environment on the west side of the city.
In fact, we've got another graphic here. This is actually hanging on the wall, and it just demonstrates some of the things that are around the community. And I think you said it represents the highest crime, the murder rate?
Yeah, so 60% of all the murders that occur in Metro Atlanta, 13 counties, 7 million population, occur in our neighborhood. So
what percentage?
60%.
And that's where you live?
And that's where we hang
out. That's great. Yeah. That's good to know. So this, your goal in life wasn't to live in the area of the city with the highest murder rate. You had other goals and dreams. And so now that we kind of know where City of Refuge is located, tell us a story of how you got there. It's just fascinating.
Yeah, so my dad was a pastor. So after a little rough time, I ended up in college, went to university and graduated with a degree in pastoral ministry. And 14 years of that, youth pastor, executive pastor at a couple of different churches. My wife, Rhonda, started having little girls. We have 5 daughters, Cassie, Kelsey, Kenzie, Kaylin, Carly.
Did you hear that? Some people said, oh my goodness. I thought that was a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I look like this. But anyway, 5 daughters now giving us 15 grandchildren. So life's pretty active. So traditional ministry about 14 years, a little over 28 years ago, I was invited to go downtown to a little church that was in disrepair, just a few folks left, no money. Had been around for a long time, been without a pastor for 6 months, and I was invited to go down with the idea of closing the church and selling the property. And so Ron and I talked about it, and I said, well, it's a good idea. I get to speak every Sunday and develop some more business acumen, sell the property, and come back to our nice suburban lifestyle at the end of 6 months.
Yep.
And so 5 or 6 weeks into that journey, a young lady showed up that Sunday morning, stood out in the crowd a little bit. At the end of service, she walked down. She was weeping. She took me by the hands, and she said, I've been hooking and stripping 14 years. Can you help me get out of the life? And we just said yes. Weren't really sure what that meant, but we helped her that week. She showed up the next week. She brought Bill with her. Bill was a 52-year alcoholic. He said, hadn't been in church in 30 years and was one of her paying customers. And she said to him during the week, I found something I think you need. Come go to church with me. So he did. They sat on the second row, and we started singing that little chorus, I Need You More Than Yesterday. And about 5 minutes into the service, Bill just literally fell out in the center aisle and started weeping and wailing and wouldn't stop. So I went down. I go, can I help you, buddy? He goes, well, I think I need Jesus. And I said, well, we usually do that at the end of service. Right? And he's like, no, I want him now. I said, fine, take Jesus. So anyway, so the next Sunday, 4 more people in crisis showed up. The next Sunday, 10 more. They just wouldn't stop coming. I'm like, hey, I'm glad y'all are finding Jesus, but I need you to go to church somewhere else
Because you're trying to shut this one down. We're leaving.
But 4 months in, we walk in, and there are literally 100 people in crisis sitting in this little church going, can you help us? And I drew on my deep theological training, looked at Rhonda and said, we've been conned by God, woman. I mean, it's just wrong on every level, right? I mean, everybody knew that we grew up in the mountains of Virginia. I'm supposed to go back there and pastor for 30 years. I mean, we knew what we were supposed to do. We thought. And then God saying, how about hanging out in the inner city the rest of your life?
Wow.
So we resigned our position and started City of Refuge out of that little church.
Wow.
And a couple months later, Rhonda called me out of her quiet time. We were still living in the suburbs. I was driving in. She was still pulling our girls across the street in a little red wagon to school. And so she called me one morning. She said, hey, babe, if we're really going to impact the city, we got to go live in the city. If we want people in crisis to trust us, we have to live with them and show them we trust them. And I'm like, well, I don't appreciate you and God getting together and making plans for my life. But, you know, you shouldn't argue with God and you can't argue with your wife. So the short story is we ended up moving in the third floor of this old 65-year-old church building with our daughters in the city.
And the daughters were how old then?
They were 7, 5, 3, and 1 at the time. Fifth was born while we lived there. The first night we lived there, drug addict was high, tried to steal our car, but he was so high, hot-wired the windshield wiper motor. So I came out the next morning, the car's still there. So we lived there 6 years, broken into 34 times, 3 vehicles stolen, guns, knives, fist fights. I've been in Superior Court with guys that threatened to kill my family. And it's just the most fun we'd ever had in church. I mean, just like, great.
Wow. So you started just, hey, people are asking for things. You're just trying to say yes. And that I think that was one of the powerful things. Bruce has a TED Talk that's so powerful. And just the power of just saying yes over and over before you knew what the yes entailed. Right. And from that, City of Refuge. So you were sort of doing handouts, sort of hand to mouth. How did it go from there?
About a year in, we just started this after-school program for 20 kids, feeding them bad food, but also trying to help them learn to read and write. Out of that, we started a summer camp program, Christmas in the City, and then over the course of time, as we were dropping them off back in poverty neighborhoods, I really felt like God impressed me. Are you just going to continue to drop kids in crisis off in mothers' homes that are in crisis? So you're dropping these children off with a single mom who doesn't have the ability to pay her bills, doesn't have food, maybe not have furniture, maybe selling her body just to survive. So we started a single moms program out of that. And while we're driving down Bankhead Highway, at the time it was called, as we're driving down to pick up the single moms, we noticed all of these homeless individuals just hanging out. And I felt like the Lord said, are you just going to drive by one population in need to get to another population in need? So we moved into our environment of helping homeless come off the street, deal with their mental health, their addiction. Out of that, we just begin to understand there are multiple pieces. There's a myriad of issues that these individuals face. And so as we reflect now, Andy, on the 28 years, it looks like we had a great strategic plan. But the truth of the matter is God would just open one door, we would say yes, which opened another door, we would say yes. Until now, when you look back, it's a comprehensive approach to helping people move from brokenness to independence and self-sustainability.
And the amazing thing is you did this just kind of boots on the ground, figured it out. Meanwhile, there was research that had been done to demonstrate that that is really the only approach that will work.
Right.
When I toured with you that afternoon, there was a graphic on the wall that you stopped and walked me through, and we have a picture of that, because this is sort of the research behind what you discovered in real time. And in some ways, you were encouraged not to address it holistically the way you did. So will you walk us through this and then talk about your application?
Yeah, so a few years in, somebody said, well, you're following the Brookings Institute model, think tank that does studies on various things, one of those poverty. And I wasn't familiar, but we've checked it out. And so the Brookings Institute did a 10-year study on poverty, and they identified that if you're born into poverty or enter poverty at an early age, there are 4 things that have to be addressed for you to have a chance to be middle class by middle age.
And they have to be addressed simultaneously.
They have to be done in a connected fashion.
Yeah.
That's right. So you have to address safe and affordable housing, quality educational opportunities, health and wellness, and a livable wage earning opportunity.
One more time, those 4 things.
Yep. safe and affordable housing,
right,
quality educational opportunities, health and wellness, and a livable wage earning opportunity upon graduation from high school. And if you address all four of those in a concerted effort, research shows that there's an almost 90% chance that you'll be middle class by middle age.
Wow.
But if you miss just one of the four, there's a 90% chance you'll live in poverty your entire life. And so inside the city of Atlanta, for example, if you're born into poverty in the city limits of Atlanta, there's only a 4% chance that you will ever escape poverty. So only 4% unless all four of these things are connected and provided for you.
So when you discover this sort of intuitively as you were working these different populations, and you were told, you should tell it, you were encouraged, don't try to do all four, just choose one. And
yeah, well, we had lived in that building 6 years. We'd outgrown it. So I asked a real estate buddy to go over in the neighborhood we're in now and find a property for us. So he came back and said, we found 8 acres of land, 5 acres under roof, an 8-foot fence with razor wire and an armed guard at the gate. And I'm like, well, our dreams have come true. go see how much they want for that. So the owner said he'd take $1,600,000 for it. And my counteroffer was, we'll have any money. And so... So I made that same offer for 6 months, and 6 months later, he gave it to us. Mm. So he donated it. So we moved in, and when I looked around this huge space, I said, well, we can do everything in one location.
Yep.
So those first 6 years had taught us how difficult the journey is for somebody coming out of incarceration or addiction or homelessness or trafficking. They would have to go to one location for housing, somewhere else for education, somewhere else for vocation, somewhere else for addiction. Yep. Get a different case manager in each one of those environments. And so I said, well, what if we did all that on one campus, coordinated intake, coordinated case management? So I pitched that idea to philanthropists and funders and foundations and churches and corporations all over Metro Atlanta. And they all said it was a bad idea. They said, you need to focus, specialize on one thing. You're spreading yourself too thin. And my answer was, well, our specialization and focus is transformation, which requires all of these things. So we just started scraping it together, literally. And now, 22 years later, since we got that property, we have all of those services on our campus. We've served over 50,000 individuals on our campus in Atlanta. It's incredibly successful. We've expanded to 9 locations around the country. And all of those, yeah. So, and it's interesting that most of those people who thought it was a bad idea now think it was a good idea. And even more so, several of them think it was their idea.
Yeah, but that's how the world works. So while you're on this, so talk a little bit about what currently you have, because you have locations in that part of town that are separate from that original piece of property that are remarkable.
Yeah, so we now have on our campus in Atlanta or connected to our campus, we have the main campus, which serves women and children that are experiencing homelessness, 36 housing units for them. We have a preschool that's free for 6 weeks of age to 5 years of age, a private Christian school on campus.
Private Christian school goes from what?
It goes currently from 3rd through 12th grade, and next year we'll add kindergarten, 1st and 2nd, so we'll have a full scope and sequence approach to education. We have a medical clinic that 9 full-time medical staff, 750 patient visits a month with a partnership with Mercy Care, incredible. We have a survivor program we'll talk more about later. We have vocational training program. And then in the community with partners, we built 47-unit apartment community that's safe and affordable housing for individuals. We have 2 8-bedroom homes with 8 baths that we just opened for women coming out of incarceration or trafficking. Breaking ground on 10 townhomes that will be opportunities for individuals to have affordable housing in our community. We purchased land and built 5 single-family dwellings for individuals to have an opportunity to be first-time homeowners in the histories of their families. Mm. We're currently under construction on a new facility, 3-story facility, that will have an entrepreneurship center on the first level. Individuals in crisis be able to present their business plans, have a group of entrepreneurs evaluate those, and those who are approved will actually be able to do the startup costs and micro lines from them from Affinity Bank that's located on our campus. Fresh food market, behavioral health center, 25 more units of affordable housing. So trying to expand, our goal over the next 5 years is to have 1,000 available units for individuals in our community to have safe and affordable housing while having access to all the services we provide on campus.
So I got home after this tour and I told Sandra, I said, I feel like I need to go do something with my life. That is remarkable. And hearing it describes one thing. Talk a little bit more about the homes you've built, because this was so emotional to me when you pointed this out. Homes you built that the people can purchase. It'll be their first purchase for, you know, in the history of their family to have home ownership. And there's a couple of specific examples. But anyway, it's an amazing idea.
Yeah, well, we several years ago, we raised some money and bought a bunch of properties around us because we knew there was some revitalization efforts coming, which are great, but at the same time displaces and gentrifies neighborhoods. So we wanted to have affordable housing. And one of the main emphases is that there are just a number of folks that we engage over the years, either, frankly, as people we serve or sometimes even our employees, that have their families have never owned their own home, right? So you've been unable to build any kind of generational stability. Yep. And so one of the ideas was, let's raise money and build homes that we then can sell at a less than market rate to individuals to have them, so they will have the opportunity for generational impact by owning their own home. And for them, we also create an agreement where they, if they sell that home within a certain number of years, they actually sell it back to us at 10% over what they paid for it so that we can keep it in the affordable pipeline so somebody else has that same opportunity. So it's incredibly rewarding to walk up on a porch and cut ribbon with a family that has never owned their own home and watch them move into there and embrace that. It's just, it's unbelievable feeling that happens.
Again, from crisis to stability to independence.
That's right.
To see that right there.
Yep.
Unbelievable. And then so many of the folks that you have helped have come back around to serve and to work in the organization. Some of those stories you've told me we don't have time for, but they're
phenomenal. About 25% of our staff now are folks that have come through the program. And so they engage and embrace that at a higher level. Yeah, absolutely.
One of the important parts in this cycle is job skills, to be able to have a living wage. And what they are doing on site in terms of job skill and skill training is so incredible. So I want to start with this picture. Tell us about this, and then we can go from here and talk about the other job skills. So what are we looking at?
Yeah, so years ago, we realized that unless people have a livable wage opportunity, they often revert back to bad behavior. Yep. So I spoke to Genuine Parts and Napa, to their executive leadership, and asked them, pitch the idea of an auto training program. And so they helped us build out this incredible shop. We're currently in class number 25 of individuals, men and women, going through auto technician training. It's a 16-week class with soft skills, life skills, financial skills, and obviously the technical skills. When they graduate, they can have up to 9 levels of ASC certification. When they graduate, they get a rolling cart full of $3,000 set of tools. We announce where they're going to work. Many of them don't have their own vehicle transportation. We get there, so we have vehicles donated to organization. They get them roadworthy after graduation. We present them with a title and keys to a vehicle so they can drive to work versus public transportation.
And fix it if it breaks.
Yeah, fix it if it breaks. Yeah. And with 24 graduating classes, we've had 100% employment placement out of all 24 classes.
That's great. This space is so beautiful. When I walked in, everything you've done is, that's the other thing. It's all so beautiful. But this was unbelievable. And on our way there, we walked by a welding class, and then you've got coding. So talk about some of the other job skills.
Yeah, so additional to Napa, we have a culinary arts training program. We have coding academy, cybersecurity, welding class. The first class of welders will graduate this coming Friday, as a matter of fact. 100% of them are already employed before graduation. Hospitality, customer service, armed security personnel. Last year, we were blessed to put 819 people that came to us unemployed or underemployed in the workforce in Metro Atlanta.
819. And again, you mentioned a number, the dollar per hour somebody has to make to survive, to have independent living. What was it?
Yeah, latest report in Atlanta, a single adult without children needs to make a minimum $19.05 an hour just to survive. So our goal is to put all of those who drove through our program in jobs that pay $20 or more an hour.
And talk a little bit too, for a while you were training individuals in coding, and then to cybersecurity. I was surprised by that.
So coding was our sort of number one class for compensation when I graduated, and then AI has taken over a lot of the coding now, and cybersecurity has actually become even more important as a result of AI. And so cybersecurity is just a phenomenal class that runs, and we everybody that graduates goes straight into the workforce in Metro Atlanta corporations. The last graduating class, really phenomenal. The lowest starting salary was $73,000. The highest was $125,000. And again, when you're coming out of a place of crisis, I actually had staff come to me and say, I think maybe I should go through the cyber class.
I know. I told Bruce, I said, some parents are going to be calling you like, does my child have to have a felony to get into the program? Or what exactly do they have to do wrong to be a part of that? We could go on and on. It is absolutely remarkable. So much so that the city of Atlanta, of course, you're on the short list of people they call for things. Talk a little bit about that relationship. I think that's encouraging.
Yeah, you know, I think it's important for those that work in the nonprofit NGO space to have multiple relationships. So with churches, the faith community, with philanthropists, with other organizations doing good work, and with the city government or state government. And so it's just been a great relationship. I've served under four different mayors, all of whom very engaged in trying to make our city a better place, make it a city that's flourishing. So the opportunity we have to provide education resources to others in the community that may not have been around as long as we have, the opportunity we have to gain from them. So it's this very reciprocal kind of relationship where we're working to benefit each other for the greater good of the whole city.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And you have housing, crisis housing, I forget how many units for, if they just show up with somebody, you said yes, you showed me those apartments.
Yeah, so we have 36 units for moms with children that are experiencing homelessness, 119 beds for survivors we'll talk about, the multiple apartments and houses around, and then we have an emergency crisis center that's 24/7. Yeah. So anytime we get a call at any point of the night, 2, 3, 4 in the morning, they call the hotline, then the rescue team goes out to pick them up wherever they may be.
So your rescue team from City of Refuge.
Yeah, a partner rescue team that actually we work with that's been in the city for a long time.
Wow. Yep. And you take them.
And we take them. We take everybody, and we're going to give everybody a shot, right? Yep. And then we'll figure out if we're the best place for them or if they're somewhere else that can serve them better.
It's unbelievable. So you've been so successful, other cities have seen City of Refuge. They're like, we need this in our city. Talk a little bit about those expansion opportunities.
Yeah, so we have 3 additional locations in Georgia that do a piece of what we do. We have 3 locations in Virginia, where I grew up. We have a location in Chicago, 1 in Baltimore. We're in the current launch phase in Brunswick, Georgia, and in Nashville, Tennessee, and in conversations with a couple other cities that have invited us to come in as well. So it's fun to see something that you watch God create and build now be replicated in other environments as well.
All because of a 6-month assignment you didn't want. And wow. One of the most emotional parts of my tour was the housing you have for women who've been trafficked with their children. And the hallway was empty. It was just the two of us. And women are taken in, and they're given privacy as long as they need privacy. And so this is such a sensitive topic, but I would love for you to share as much as you can with our whole church of what you shared with me that day, and especially why this is so important and that you're doing this in the city of Atlanta.
Yeah, it is a tough subject, but sex trafficking is the second fastest growing criminal enterprise in the world. The latest projection shows $236 billion worldwide spent on illegal purchase of sex. It's the fastest growing because it's moving faster than drugs and guns, because you can sell drugs or guns once a night. You can sell a kid or a woman 10 times a night. So it's an economic issue. America is one of the top investors or buyers of illegal sex in the world. We don't think that, but we are. We're the number one consumer of child porn in the world, 22 million graphic images of child porn available. In Atlanta, every 7 days, on average, 47,700 ads for the illegal purchase of sex are posted online in Atlanta every 7 days, with a minimum of 10% of those 4,700 being for sex with children under the age of 12. So it's just a graphic, unbelievable, dark, evil thing that we're fighting. And so 13 years ago, a buddy of mine called and said, we've rescued a young lady. Can you take her? And I said, well, we don't have a survivor program. He said, we just need to hide her. They're looking for her. They'll kill her. So we literally hid her away on campus. She didn't come out of her room for nearly 40 days, asked to see whoever's in charge. I took a couple staff in. Her first words were, "You got to take me to the courthouse, wipe away the fact I ever existed. Change my name, social security number, birth certificate. They'll find me, they'll kill me." So we did, had to get the law enforcement involved. And I don't know, you know, I'm impulsive sometimes. I just went home that night and I told Rhonda, I said, "Hey, we're raising money and building a safe house for survivors of trafficking. Got to raise $1 million, build this 12-bedroom house." And she said, "Well, you've never launched a safe house before." I said, "Well, I've never been married to you till I married you, and it worked out. So we'll give it a shot." So we built our first safe house, which led to a second, third, fourth, fifth. We now have 119 beds for survivors. We've served over 1,200 women. Yeah. Served over 1,200 women now. We launched an organization a couple years ago called Most Men Opposing Sex Trafficking. Men are 95% of the buyers and 95% of the traffickers. It's a male issue. And so we're asking men to rise up and activate and become the protectors and providers we were created to be, stop sexualizing and objectifying the women and children in our life. It's a movement that's crawling across the country right now. And I'll say this, this is not an over there issue. This is not a third world foreign country. This is our issue. Atlanta has been number one, two, or three every year for the past decade in number of calls to the national hotline around trafficking per capita. $300 million a year spent in Atlanta on illegal purchase of sex. Pimps in Atlanta take home an average of $30,000 a week from those they traffic. This is our issue. Our men's program, we actually have an interdiction team that we set up and do operations around the country. We set up 3 miles from here at a hotel and did an operation and arrested multiple men who showed up to buy sex from children that night and took down—
From where we're sitting.
From where we're sitting.
Yeah. Yep.
So it is our issue. It's in every part of our city, every part of our state. Mm.
Again, that hallway, as you had shared some of this with stories, we were the only ones on the hallway, and your point was these women don't come out. We bring them their food. They have privacy until they are ready to interact with, and you provide counseling and all the rest, and they're able to be with their children. Their kids aren't taken away from them and put in
It's one of the major things we discovered, that children often use as a pawn in trafficking, right? Yep. If they're not being trafficked, their mothers are. And there are only a few organizations that allow housing for women with their children and provide the trauma-informed care for both the adult and the adolescent. Mm-hmm. So statistics show that 83% of those who sexually offend were sexually offended. And so those children have been exposed and often subjected to their own sexual abuse. Unless we start that trauma-informed care with a faith perspective early in life, they likely will fall into some level of offense somewhere in their life.
That's amazing. It's something. So I told Bruce, I said, "Hey, at the end of our interview, you have the moral authority to speak to the church in general. What you've done is amazing. You've seen things we haven't seen, and you have a broader perspective of even the impact of the local church, because we, you know, we're a local church or network of churches, but we're in our own little gerbil wheel, you know, doing our thing." So I said, "So Bruce, if you had a microphone to the church in general, to Christians in general, what would you say?" And he shared that with Rhonda, and Rhonda said, "Does Andy really know what he's asking?" And I said, "Yes, we're big boys and girls. We want to hear. So the floor is yours."
Well, you know, the greatest commandment Jesus says, love the Lord your God with everything you have, right? Mind, body, soul, spirit, and then love your neighbor as yourself. And I think as the church, the big C church in the country, in the world, I think we do a pretty good job most of the time with part A of that commandment, to love the Lord our God. I think sometimes we lose our way a little bit in loving our neighbor as ourselves, because sometimes we prejudge our neighbor and we determine in our own minds or spirits why they're in their circumstance. And sometimes we choose not to invest in their lives. And so as we started this journey of City of Refuge, I found myself just going from passage to passage, understanding what God says about care for the poor, the needy, the sojourner, the widow, the orphan. In Isaiah 58, the prophet speaks by the Spirit of the Lord, and he says, "Hey, God's not really impressed with the fact that you show up at church on Sunday in sackcloth and ashes and fasting. This is the fast that God requires of you, that you break the yoke of bondage in the lives of those around you, that you divide your bread with the hungry, and that you take into your house the homeless poor. And he says, when you do these things, your healing will quickly come and your light will rise as a noonday sun and you will become as a well-watered garden. And then I stumbled across Micah chapter 6 and verse number 8, where the prophet again uses the word, the Lord requires that you do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly before the Lord your God. And for me, doing justice simply means we take what's wrong and we make it right. It's wrong for individuals to be sleeping on our sidewalks. It's wrong for children to be abused. It's wrong for women to be trafficked. It's wrong for those who've been incarcerated to come out and not have a safe housing environment, employment opportunities. So we try to take what's wrong and make it right. And then I read Matthew chapter 25, where Jesus says, you know, in the last days and for eternity, some of you will spend eternity with me and some of you won't. If you're a sheep on my right hand, you will. And if you're a goat on my left hand, you won't. And here's how you know if you're a goat or a sheep. You're a sheep if you give water to the thirsty and food to the hungry, and you clothe the naked and you visit the sick and the imprisoned, and you're a goat if you don't, and if you do, we'll be together, and if you don't, we won't. And then I got to 1 John 3, 16, 17, and 18, where the apostle says, can you truly say that the love of God abides in you if you see your brother or sister, your friend or family in need, and you have what it takes to meet their need, and you choose not to share it with them? Can you truly say that the love of God exists in you? And so I just want to say to you today and to all those that are watching that you have been very generous to City of Refuge. Over $600,000 has been invested in our ministry over the past several years to help us walk people from darkness to light. But even inside of that, I think you can do more. As individuals, as a corporation, as a church, as people who follow Christ, I think we have inside of us the innate desire to invest in others. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to share a bit of our story and to hopefully inspire you and be rich, to be richer than ever.
Thank you, Bruce.
Perfect.
You can be seated for just a minute. Bruce has a plane to catch, and I said, I will let you out early. He's not escaping the rest of the service. And I told you, now you feel like I do, I need to go home and do something with my life. But here is your opportunity. Here's our corporate opportunity. If you are new, this is so exciting. This is why we love doing this. Every year at this time, we combine our resources as a network of churches to do corporately what we do individually all year long. Because you're Jesus followers, you get this. And that is to give, to serve, and to love in Jesus' name. And Be Rich, this generosity initiative, is our opportunity to remind our communities of what Bruce just reminded all of us of. And that's simply this, that everybody matters to God, whether God matters to them or not. And the reason we call this Be Rich, even though for some people it's a little bit offensive, but it gets their attention. The reason we call it Be Rich is something the Apostle Paul actually wrote to his protege, Timothy, in a letter that's part of the New Testament. And in this letter, here's what he said to Timothy, and it's directed to Timothy, which is directed to us. He said this, Timothy, command those who are rich in this present world to do good and to be rich, that's where we got the name from, to be rich in good deeds and to be generous and to be willing to share. And the truth is, most of us are rich in this present world, especially when you compare what we have to what other people in the world don't have. But most of us are actually rich even within our culture. And the reason we don't feel rich is because we don't have enough to do everything we want to do, but that's not the definition of rich. Rich is extra. And in the first century when this was written, rich people were the people who had extra. So if you have extra and I have extra, then this is directed directly to us. So we should be generous. And so here's what we decided to do years ago. Instead of competing with, you know, organizations like Convoy of Hope or the City of Refuge or other organizations we partner with, instead of competing, we decided to partner. We decided to come alongside them with financial resources and people resources and volunteer resources and partner with them in what they were doing, both faith-based nonprofits and non-faith-based nonprofits. We just want to partner with the best of the best to make a difference in our world. So we partner rather than compete. So in the Atlanta area, we have 35 of what we call Intersect Partners. And Convoy of Hope, as you've met them a few years ago, and City of Refuge, these are two examples of our Intersect Partners. 35 Intersect Partners. These are organizations, nonprofits in the Atlanta area that we partner with all year long. We send them volunteers and resources. And they address issues much like the issues that Bruce just talked about. They address addiction recovery, food insecurity, foster care, housing and homelessness, health and medical care, human trafficking, job training and education, relief and disaster response. About 40 organizations in the Atlanta area that, again, we partner with all year long. And then there are organizations beyond that. And here's how it works. For the past several months, we do this every year, for the past several months, our Intersect staff at all of our campuses have gone to these partners and these fabulous organizations, and we've asked them two questions. Essentially, we've said, give us your wish list. In other words, what would make a big difference for you right now? If just dream with us, what would make a big difference, and what would help you make a big difference in the lives of the people that you are serving? So that we took all those wish lists, we vetted those requests, and again, we didn't make any promises. We said, just give us your wish list. And we vetted several million dollars worth of projects. Now, in Be Rich, there's not a financial goal. Our goal is a participation goal. We're asking 100% of you to give, and then we are giving 100% of it away. We're asking 100% of you to give, and then we're giving 100% of it away. And when I say 100% of you, I mean those of you who are watching online, those of you who are that are in any of our churches, if you're a Christian, a non-Christian, if you hate Christians, if you used to be a Christian, if you're part of a different faith experience, it doesn't matter, because even though we don't know each other, we know and you know that you have compassion in your heart, that you want to be generous. Most of us are more generous on the inside than we are on the outside. But feeling generous isn't generosity. As we said earlier, doing is what makes the difference. And this is our opportunity to do something corporately that's gonna make a big difference individually in these organizations and in the lives of the people they serve. And here's the great news. In spite of everything that's happened in our economy, there is no shipping or handling costs. There are no administrative fees removed from the dollars you give. And the really great news is Be Rich is both inflation and tariff proof, okay? It is the same as it's been year after year. We're asking everybody to give a one-time gift of $39.95. That's right, $39.95. And here's the thing. If all of you, and if those of you watching, and those of you at our churches and all of our extended churches, if all of you today give $39.95, we'll raise about $2.5 million today. And that $2.5 million will cover 44 really big projects. But in case you get carried away, because you generally get carried away with this and keep adding zeros to your $39.95, we vetted another $2.5 million worth of projects for these fabulous organizations. And this money is gonna go to help them with things like operating costs, program expenses, staffing costs, capital expenses, technology solutions, and transportation. And here's why we love this list. People love to give money to nonprofits if they think their money is gonna go directly to helping the people those nonprofits serve. And every nonprofit organization works hard to make sure a large percentage of what is given goes directly to the people they serve. But you're smart. Many of you run organizations or you're part of big organizations. There are organizational costs that have to be addressed for organizations to be efficient and to work properly. So because we're an organization and we're a nonprofit organization that understands that, we love asking these organizations, tell us about the stuff that people really aren't interested in funding, but if we would help you fund it, it would make you more efficient. And that's why we love the things on this list, especially staffing costs, because every organization we go to and say, what can we we do to help you be more efficient or help you do a better job? They almost always say, if we could just hire an HR person, if we could just hire an IT person, if we could just hire. So we come in and say, you know what? Because of the generosity of our congregations, we're gonna fund a staff position for 2 years or 3 years. We're gonna help you with technology costs. We're gonna help you with operating costs. We're gonna help you with the things that nobody else wants to fund because we understand as a nonprofit organization, you have to have those things. So these are game changers. These are game changers for these fabulous organizations, and they ultimately are life changers for the people they serve in all of these communities. And the thing is, again, Bruce said it so well. He said it better than I'll ever say it. Jesus was so clear about this over and over and over that devotion to God is best demonstrated and best authenticated, not by the sermons we preach or the songs we sing, but by doing for others. Again, as I've said so many times, if you've attended any of our churches for any length of time, Jesus said, those who put the things I teach into practice are like men and women who are building their lives on a firm foundation. So once again, let's show our communities that our faith is more than just sermons and songs. As God demonstrated his love for us, let's demonstrate our love for our communities. And we've made it as easy as we possibly can make it. On your way out today, regardless of what campus you're at, you're gonna see some green balloons and some red balloons. If you have cash or check, cash, it's the rectangle green things, some might remember that. Anyway, cash or check, you go to a green balloon. If you have a credit card or a debit card, you can go to a red balloon, or even easier, from the seat you're sitting in now and sitting in at home, if you'll simply go to use this QR code, or if you would prefer, if you'll go to berich.org, you can give from your phone immediately. Now, some of you have been looking at your phone the entire service. So if I could get your attention, and if you could actually use this QR code, we would love for you to give today. And if we all participate today, we're gonna raise a couple of $3 million. And as the time goes by, we're gonna keep you updated, not only with how much money comes in, but what we do with the money. So on your mark, get set, let's all be rich, and I'll see you next Sunday.